Thought I heard that. Anyway, the chatbot was something that we talked about last time. The artificial intelligence bot that lives on our, a couple of different of our web pages to answer generally what we would consider maybe low-level questions that students or prospective students or maybe family members or community members might have. So I hope some of you have had the opportunity to maybe ask some questions and play around with it a little bit. But there was a small implementation team that once it was determined which product we were going to go with, something that was we had been looking at actually for many years, but something that was made possible by some of the COVID funds, because obviously communication with various constituents is even more challenging in the times of COVID. So a small group of individuals was involved in the implementation team in order to get the chatbot up and running in the time frame in which we need to do that. So I did want to give a shout out to Aaron Akers and Claudia Mather with the center, and then also and Todd Mowbray with the center, and then Randy Toney. And recently they've added a few more members into their team, Tana Cooper, Maggie Harris, and two members from IT, Pam Henning and Shelly Schmidt. So that was a pretty big project. It continues with some weekly meetings and things as the bot gets smarter in answering questions. And the overall idea behind it, of course, is that it can address questions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It can address more low-level questions, which can allow individuals then to really respond to more complicated student questions and things like that, and give a nice amount of coverage to the different inquiries and things like that that we might have. So Randy Toney gave me some extra information this morning just about kind of the conversational nature, how it's kind of fun for those on the team to be able to watch people converse with the bot, and just kind of the friendly banter sometimes that comes out of those conversations. And also talked to me a little bit about the something that we heard about from most of the vendors that we had looked at, and certainly from this vendor we went with, AdmitHub, that in that world of artificial intelligence, how, you know, there's no ploy to try and make it seem like it's a human answering you. It's very upfront that, you know, this is a an automated or artificial intelligent product, and that if it can't answer your questions, it'll, you know, send you off to a human or something like that. And that the idea behind that is it really maybe reduces some of the stress about asking questions. Maybe a question that we aren't as willing to ask a person, we might be willing to ask a computer. So that's kind of an interesting, I think, comment on the human nature maybe. But anyway, part of the best practices coming out of that field, and something that they've seen too as we've been working with it. So as Bart the bot continues to get questions and the knowledge base grows, and the bot gets smarter, and we can learn from that as well, because when we see what kinds of things people are inquiring about, what are our most frequently asked questions, what are things that maybe people are confused about? We can do some things on our end to make our self-service information even more robust in order to reduce some of the confusion on students' parts or other stakeholders' parts. So I also had on my list enrollment. I know Mark's going to touch on that this morning in Dr. Hellman's message to us. He mentioned it as well. Again, you know, we are pretty much in the same boat with other institutions throughout the country, and certainly our peers across the state, with our, you know, decrease in enrollment corresponds with the COVID timeframe. And while enrollment's always a focus, obviously we're going to need to really put some extra efforts into trying to address enrollment here at the Bart County campus, but also with online enrollment, we understand that our greatest opportunity to really grow enrollment comes way beyond our immediate service area here at Bart County campus, and so we'll want to be focused on that as well. Additionally, Dr. Hellman mentioned this morning in his, that was Mark Dean in his COVID update. The good news that we've had so far is we've been testing various groups, targeted groups of students as they arrive back to start classes for the spring semester on the Martin County Great Bend campus. Two positive test results in just a little over 200 tests so far. We've completed about 50% of the testing that we'll be doing. Two more days of testing are slated, one for this Friday and one for next Tuesday. And so we look forward to having similar low positive tests. And we think that's a good way to be able to kick off the year with some reassurance that maybe we won't be incredibly at high level negatively affected by students on this campus who are ill with the virus. And we will also continue, some of that testing will continue associated with protocols that need to be in place for student athletes before they can travel and compete and those kinds of things. Some of those tests are set aside for some students who will be involved in adult education programs, and then for students who present and others who present with symptoms. So the testing on our campus, we call it screening tests, is giving us an opportunity to kind of stay on things more so even than we had available to us in the fall. And then our Student Success Academy, our Higher Learning Commission project that we're engaged in, right now we are in year two. We are entering into a phase where we're going to be finishing this broad and robust environmental scan that we've been doing. It has involved four different inventories, and we're moving now into the last inventory that we will be doing, which is our engagement inventory. And actually, we're going to be asking various groups of individuals, as well as just making some calls out to the college population as a whole to participate with us in an activity, an engagement activity. We actually had the first opportunity yesterday to work with the program's topics and processes group to kind of use them as guinea pigs in seeing how we were going to roll out this this activity, this engagement activity, where we can get some feedback and some information from our not only college employees, but we'll also be doing this with groups of students. And so Stephanie Joyner led us yesterday in that activity. I think it was really well received by the group of individuals that participated. So shortly, information will be coming out about the various groups that we hope to be able to lead through this activity, and then also the sort of open invitation. I believe we'll be trying to work with the center to do some kind of open invitation opportunities for anyone who either wants to participate again or didn't have an opportunity through an established group to participate and give us feedback on what our levels of engagement are and moving us on through the end of the environmental scan part of our Student Success Academy, which will have us start to pivot to developing our student success plan for our institution. And that's the final product that we will end the academy with HLC. And then I did want to talk just for a few minutes. The last comments I want to make have to do with the Fall 2020 Student Services Survey. About 3 or 4 years ago, we implemented an annual survey to try to gain some additional feedback on a host of pieces of information. One of the very first things that we wanted to do was we wanted to mirror some of the information that we ask students on the graduation survey. We wanted to ask these same types of questions about various different services and the student experience and things like that earlier in their experience or their journey with Barton. So it has become an annual fall survey, and so we were able to again in fall 2020. We had a little bit lower response rate than we had in the past, but we did have 523 students respond to that survey. 70% of them indicated they were fully online students. I would say that that may be a little suspect, because I think that we may have some students who considered themselves fully online when we would not consider them fully online in the fall, just based on them taking classes that were Zoom or live online in nature, as opposed to what we would consider fully online. But still, obviously, online students were well represented. 13% of the respondents indicated they were from the Barton County Great Bend campus, and then 8% of respondents said they were high school students, which is, you know, not bad from that smaller demographic. and then much smaller response rates from our other locations. Just a couple of highlights I wanted to pull out from the survey results. We do continue to have requests for the ability, especially with online classes, to have greater access to course material. Students can work on their time frame. So Barton's intention to investigate what we're now looking at in terms of direct assessment classes, something I know the instructional folks are looking at, is something that might help us address that continued request. I think, you know, we allow students to comment on the survey as well as, you know, we really try to put our focus on the actual, the metrics, the, you know, the actual percentages of responses, because comments are, you know, by their very nature anecdotal. But I think on this last, we've seen it probably the last three surveys, and on this most recent survey, at least four different comments from students about, you know, wishing that they could manage their time according to their own schedules, having two jobs and families and things like that. So it's good that we are already deciding to look at that. This is a nice response to things that we're hearing from students. We also had a couple of comments about students needing help the way it was described in the comment at the student level and not using college speak. And I thought those were really interesting because prior to us receiving those results, the college has focused some efforts on utilizing the Gutting-Fogg Readability Index to try and make sure that we're using language on our websites, in communications that are going out to students, using language that makes sense to students and speaks to them or communicates to them or attempts to at least at a level that really makes sense to them. And maybe we strip out some of the jargon or the acronyms or some of the things that make sense to all of us who are kind of in the know in this world of academia that maybe doesn't resonate or ring real clear to the people that we're trying to communicate with. So I thought it was a really nice way to show that those efforts really, really make a difference in terms of needing to communicate with individuals in a way that might make sense to them. And then overall, we get really good response, or I would say pretty good response to satisfaction with our response time to students' questions, inquiries, emails to us, those kinds of things. But we do always tend to still get some comments from individuals who feel like, you know, our responses are not timely enough, whether it's from faculty or staff. And so again, I think this is one of those areas where we're hoping that GitHub will help us, that as we can start to help students and other stakeholders understand that they have the ability 24/7 to be able to get a question answered. We can hope that that will not only reduce, you know, the time for students to be able to get the information they need, but again, as I said earlier, kind of relieve the pressure on individuals to be able to focus their responses on the more complicated student issues that perhaps the bot's not going to be able to answer. Those are my comments for this morning, and I am going to have to leave in a little while, even though we've been asked to stay a long until question and answer. So if there are questions for me now, I'm happy to take them. But if there are questions later, I'm going to ask my colleagues here to either give you the right answer or make up something that seems really believable. We're good? We're
good morning. I'm Mark Dean, VP of Finance. Didn't introduce myself last time, so I'm going to make sure I take care of that first time for this time. First thing I want to talk about is enrollment. And usually when I am speaking, I'm speaking of credit hours, not actually students in the classroom. And so with all of higher ed, we expected that COVID would negatively affect enrollment. And it did for us, just like it did with all the other community colleges in the state. Our reporting period is summer, fall, and spring for our credit hour production. And over the summer, we saw an increase of 4% over the previous year for our credit hour production. fall on average across all delivery methods that we have, we actually saw a decrease in enrollment of about 11%. So we add those together, and hopefully we're going to add Sprinus numbers into those, and that is what we actually report on. So as of the end of December, we were down about 6.5% on our total credit hours as compared to the previous year. What this does is it creates a drop in our revenue for tuition fees, about $1.2 million to date over the previous year. It does not include housing revenue, and we will see a reduction there because we have less students in housing currently. One thing that we really did not expect is we have seen an increase in the number of in-state students and in-state credit hours that we have generated this summer and fall over the previous year. Again, about 6.5% is what that increase is. And so since our state aid is based on in-state credit hour production, depending on how the rest of the community colleges fall as far as their in-state, this might help us with additional funds in the future for state aid. Since classes are just starting for the spring semester, we don't have any concrete numbers of what our semester looks like. I did look this morning, and we are down as expected over last year. Similar percentages as what we saw in the fall. But difference is our classes started a week earlier last year, and so we need to kind of wait a couple weeks to see where all of that's going to pan out. I want to talk a little bit about COVID funds. It's been all over the news. Most of higher educational institutions have received COVID funds. Barton's no exception to that. We received about $1.6 million in funds. Of that, approximately $500,000 of it had to be paid out directly to the students. And so that left about $1.1 million in funds. Remember, I talked $1.2 million in reduction in revenue for tuition. Those COVID funds cannot be used to make up that that loss. Instead, those funds had to be used for things such as personal protective equipment, supplies, quarantine expenses, testing equipment, equipment and supplies for remote learning and distance education, improved Wi-Fi in our dorms. There were a lot of projects that we were able to fund with those COVID dollars. All of the COVID dollars from the initial distribution have been spent, with the exception of a small amount for the students that will be paid out here shortly. There were strict federal guidelines in place that dictated what the funds can be used for. As you might be aware, the federal government passed another emergency relief bill. Higher ed, again, will benefit from those funds. And Barton is tentatively scheduled to receive about $2.6 million. Of that, another $500,000 will be paid out directly to the students. And we don't know yet, we haven't heard from the Department of Ed what the guidelines are for the rest of that those months as far as what we can actually use it for. Our hope is that we will be able to use part of it for lost revenue to make up for the reductions in enrollment. Spring semester. Dr. Alman and Angie already spoke a little bit about the spring semester. I just want to let everybody know that the Cougar-driven team continues to meet weekly. We're addressing the immediate needs as they're brought to us. We're planning for the future. There's going to be a number of challenges during the spring semester that we did not have during the fall semester. We did not have athletic events. We didn't have performing arts events. We will have those during the spring semester. And so we're going to be basically taking two semesters worth of events and packing them all into the spring semester. That creates additional issues with scheduling, travel, trying to get everybody to and from the places that they need to be. And so we will have some challenges that we did not see during the fall semester. I'm asking everybody continue with your preventative protective measures, wear your masks, social distance, continue your hand washing. As I said this morning, I think we can see that there is light at the end of this tunnel, but we're getting close. I don't want anybody to let down their guard. Again, if you have any questions dealing with COVID or the Cougar Driven team, you can feel free to email us, and if we don't know the answer, we will attempt to get it and get back. That's all I have this morning. Thank you.
Michelle, are you with us this morning?
Yes, I just turned my camera on. All right, thank you. Hello, everybody. The biggest news I have coming for you right now is the rollout of the new MyBarton portal. Yeah, I know you're all like, Michelle, you've been saying this for about 2 years, it feels like. Yeah, you're right. We are finally getting there. It's quite an undertaking on something like that when you have your hooks in to all kind of different places. Just this week, I have rolled out the actual new production portal to groups of people for their review. They've given us some good feedback. And so early next week, I ask that everyone watch for an email from me for you too to get to go and check out the new MyBarton portal. Depending on what your role, depends on what you see. Most of you are employees, and so you'll only see the employee side. However, some of you are also a student, you'll see a little different view. It's built off of cards, is what they are called. Please keep in mind, we are limited on color, ADA compliance. You know, we would love to make it very colorful, but it's blue, gray, and white. And so to meet ADA compliance, that's what PR tells us the colors are that we get to use. Oh, and black for text. So I will also have a link in that email for you to provide feedback in a spreadsheet form. I really can't handle everyone's emails coming back into me unless you have a screenshot suggestion or something like that. So please try to use the form, and it's just like a spreadsheet. Put your name, your comments on there, and then that way others can see if they're adding the same thing, or if I've already resolved the same thing they're about to ask. That would be most helpful. The go live date is set for Monday, February 1st. There will not be any downtime. Sunday night, our current portal will disappear, it'll be early Monday morning, like at 2 a.m., and the new portal will be there. The greatest problem is going to be if anyone saves shortcuts or doesn't clear their cache or something like that. We're working up communication to post in Canvas, in the current portal, and on the website as well. So that way students and employees can try these steps before contacting for assistance. There's always going to be someone that we're going to have to give a special attention to in order to help them get into the new portal. It's just technology and how it is. That is really my greatest concern right now. I do want to remind everybody, please use Cougar Tech Support when you're having technology malfunction issues, can't get to things. Use the tech request form when you're requesting new technology, or if you need replacement technology, the new tech form, technology request form, actually goes to your dean or VP first for their approval, and then I see it after they approve or deny. Keep in mind, even though they approve something, we still have a process to make sure that we have final approval on it and that it is something that will work with the current college setup. Other than that, short and sweet, and all I wanted to bring to this today. Does anyone have any questions? All right. Well, if you think of some, please let me know, but please look forward to my email next Monday about the new Barton portal. Thank you so much. Bye.
Okay. All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Brandon Steiner. I'm the PR and marketing director. Brief intro for what we do for any new employees that might be here. We handle everything from website to paid advertising, video creation, graphic design, posters, banners, all that stuff. And then all the social media, news releases, photography, things like that. If you visit internal.bartonccc.edu, that'll take you to the internal site, faculty and staff web pages. And under employee resources, you can find the public relations tab. That's where you can find all the information about PR and the services that we offer. And then here are a few reminders. Promotional items like pins and shirts and things like that need to be approved by us first just to make sure all the brand artwork is correct. There is a brand approval form on the internal site under our pages. And then also, if you have a request for the print shop, we have a new print request form for that as well. For those of you who do work with any designs or need the logo, please, a reminder to always pull a new logo file from the T drive under the brand folder. Various changes over time from Adobe and other companies require us to update those files from time to time. And so we just want to make sure that you have the most current one for your vendors. Another reminder that you are viewed as an ambassador out in the community and on social media and things like that. So, you know, just be careful what you say and be kind. Make our jobs easier in PR. Let us know if you have any cool hands-on activities that would look cool in photos or in video, and we can come cover it for you and maybe even go live on Facebook. And speaking of social media, please don't add any pages. If you think that you might need a page or a group or a social media presence, just send me an email and we can start that conversation and figure out how to solve your needs. Also on social media, if you have cool stories, success stories of a former student or a current student that's doing something really cool, let us know. We can write up a short feature if we have space for it on social media, maybe even send it to the media. Other than that, just know that, you know, our job is to make you all look good, and it's our honor and privilege to brag about you guys all the time. So, keep this in mind.
Good morning. For those of you new to the college, my name is Myrna Perkins, and my title is Chief Accreditation Officer and Director of Financial Aid. And I'm going to visit about accreditation. I feel a little bit like Angie. I don't have a lot to add from what we talked about the beginning of the fall semester, but I do have a few updates. We are in year 8 of a 10-year accreditation cycle. And right now through March, we're doing an HLC monitoring activity that is not really visible to most individuals. Just a handful of people are involved in providing an annual report to HLC that includes data like enrollment numbers, location information, progress of study, number of faculty, students, there's some financial aid information, and then all of our financial information. And I liken it to Nurse Kathy sent out an email just, I think it might have been last week, reminding us that we would
be having blood lab tests. We have these annually, and then that is some numbers that our doctor can discuss with us. And this is very similar in that these are numbers that HLC looks at, and if there's anything that looks beyond a threshold, they might do some follow-up conversation with the institution. However, our numbers, for as long as I have known, have passed their review. So it's just one more thing that we just tick off the list of requirements. But we are working on that now. In April, April 5th through 9th is the HLC annual conference, which will be virtual this year. So a number of individuals are being registered to participate in that. And if you recall, we were to have an additional location visit last fall, which was postponed until this spring or summer. And I just had communication with HLC this morning that late yesterday afternoon, an invitation was sent to the peer reviewer they have selected for that. And so they are waiting that individual's response back. Upon acceptance, then we can go forward with the logistics of the visit, scheduling the time when that will actually be. It will be at the Fort Riley and Grandview Plaza locations. So I'm expecting within a week, let's say, to have that peer reviewer's name and contact information, and we'll begin the scheduling part. Kathy Oshiro has graciously agreed to write the location report, and so she's already been looking at that and thinking through it. And our reaffirmation visit or site visit, our 10-year visit, is scheduled for October 24th, 25th. It's a day and a half, 2022. So that's like a year and a half away. So we're in the midst of preparing for writing the assurance argument. We have to look at the accreditation criteria, which has changed in September. A deeper view on the assumed practices and the federal compliance. A federal compliance report is required for this visit. So we keep all of those in mind and cross-checking for compliance with the expectations, and then also gauging the institution's maturity level, because HLC expects continuous improvement and gaining further maturity in processes. So that's really all I have. Angie talked to you about the Student Success Academy, which is a three-year endeavor we embarked on. But accreditation is going as usual.
Okay, folks, we're at midpoint. We're actually ahead of the game. There's 103 of you, Janet tells me, on the line. So before I offer some instructional comments, why don't we see what you want to know? What questions do you have about your institution? What things are you curious about? We've got a whole room of people here with answers. Does anyone want to break the ice and jump in there through chat or just shout it out? Any questions, any comments? See, I told you, they're not going to play with me. Nothing? Okay. All right. I told the early arrivers in this room that I really didn't know what I was going to talk about. So I listened to everything that everybody else had to say, and I looked at some resource documents, and I found a list. How about that? All right, so let's do some shout-outs and some highlights and see where we are in this new year. The first thing from instruction I'd like to applaud and recognize is the work that's been done over the last year-ish on the Concourse Project, our course syllabus management tool. I've said this a jillion times, and I'll say it one more. In my 36-year career, I've never been affiliated in some way with a project that has gotten as good a response, feedback, positive press, if you will, as the Concourse Project. The deadline to have course syllabi moved into the system, it has passed. January 1 of this year was that deadline. Obviously, as we add new colleagues, they will adopt the Concourse. If you happen to be an individual already a part of the team and you have not gotten your conversion done, please visit with your supervisor and address that as quickly as possible. One of the things that we are looking forward to, in addition to your good usage of this, an enhanced ability for students to have access to that when students leave us and they call back for syllabi that comes into my office. We're going to see some benefits to that. We're also looking forward that sometime, I'm hopeful, in this calendar year, we'll be able to actually do a little marketing with your syllabi through this tool, and we'll be able to attach in the scheduling enrollment features of our institution where students that are shopping for classes can click on a course syllabus through the Concourse tool, and they'll be able to read about your classes. We think that could be a real good enhancement for our students and for enrollment. A couple other highlights, just to make sure all of you are aware, we have a variety of professional development opportunities. This is one. But as Dr. Hyman mentioned, when we gave Brooke to the center, I believe they'll be 2 years old in February this year. We knew we had some ideas, but the ideas only continue, and they continue through your participation. They continue through your feedback. When you think about 103 people gathering for this update, when we do these updates in person, either in Great Bend or at Riley, Leavenworth, we never put 103 people together collectively. And so, if nothing else, the pandemic is teaching us some things about how we interact and communicate with each other. If you reference the adjunct faculty meeting that we had last August, 125 adjunct faculty members attended that. That was never done in person. When we talk about our Bar Online division meetings that we host once or twice a year, anywhere from 60 to 80 of you join in to participate through those. We are learning every day. The advisory boards that the workforce division hosts, we are seeing in some areas greater participation through a Zoom option, the convenience of not coming to a campus location. So we are learning. We're also learning by your activity in the webinars and the seminars and the different Cougar Tales and the things that are being provided and showcased on the website, your participation in those. It is leading us to a conversation that just got started last week about how do we track all of the professional development that's now available and that you're participating in. HLC likes to see us do that for accreditation purposes, but it's also a good thing to do because we learn from what we participate in and what we need to move to. Just yesterday, HLC kicked off a new series of webinars. Dr. Codis and I attended the first one. It was a retention webinar, specifically about online students, some really excellent content. We've got another four of those to participate in the next 2 months. We'll be doing some debriefings of those. Professional development, as we all know, can occur in many ways. It can also occur when we talk to each other. And one of the things that we debriefed after the Bar Online Division meeting last week is that as we continue to grow, and Erin and her team put forth a new newsletter that's coming for online faculty, and we talk about how do we give a platform to our faculty across this nation by discipline, by program, so that they can visit and learn from each other. That's one of our goals this year. You know, recently we just added a new team member, an adjunct team member at Fort Leavenworth, and when I received that email earlier this week to be notified that we have a new team member coming on board, what did I see in there? I saw that they've already been connected to a full-time faculty member who has agreed to mentor them and has agreed to help them get started. These are the types of things that now we're ready to start addressing. We're not infants anymore with the center. We're not infants anymore in professional development. We're toddlers. And this gives us ground and opportunity to listen to your ideas, to listen to your feedback about the participation you choose to put into your days, and to continue to grow. So I want you to understand the center, as Claudia says all the time, is yours. And by the way, it is not, and I underscore this, it is not just for faculty. It is for staff. And if there's an area that we really need to grow in, is listening to you and reaching out to you and getting your participation in these things too. So talk to Jenna, talk to Claudia, talk to the center about what your needs are. They can be for full groups, they can be for customized groups. This is a tool truly for the college system, regardless of position. I would also shout out our student academic development area. I've told Stephanie many times, Stephanie Joyner, who's the director of that, it's currently a one-person department. And when Stephanie and I got started with this a little over a year ago, we had a lot of dreams and a lot of hopes. We've made quite a bit of movement in that due to the pandemic. We are much further down the road than we thought we would be at this point because of the pandemic and the resources and the advocacy and all of the things that she has brought forth, again, for the system of instruction, for the system of students, not just for students here in Great Bend, not just for faculty in Great Bend. And so there's a lot of work afoot. Stephanie's been busy developing a mission and vision statement that we'll be releasing soon with goals identified so that all of you have a clearer understanding of what we're trying to do with student academic development. Student evaluations, for those of you that's a part of your routine or needs to be a part of your routine, just as a review, we changed up the questions after a long period of years of not doing that. We launched a midpoint. They remain open until the course is over. We've launched a notification system that reminds you that there are evaluations from your students to review, and I want you to do that. You need to give your time to what your students are saying to you, recognizing you will always have a small group that are just sounding off, but you also will have students that are sharing heartfelt comments with you, positive, those that might be constructive, things that you can do as you look ahead, and even with your current students, if they come in soon enough, things that you can be doing. So please, please read those student evaluations. Spring is also a busy time for evaluations and instruction. Our full-time faculty in the tenure track, our full-time faculty on rotation will be going through evaluation. Those are due March 5th. Our adjunct faculty are evaluated throughout a calendar year in a rotation basis. Staff appraisals are now on a monthly basis with the new adjunct tool. So there is a lot going on with that. Instructional reviews were launched beginning Monday of this week for the 2022 year. We concluded the 19-21 reviews with the deans giving me reports on the goal progress. We have to learn to work our goals. It's so easy for all of us, myself included, to submit goals to Dr. Heilman and never look at those until it's time for my appraisal a year later. All of us need to learn that the art of setting goals is also the work of doing the goals. And so I've asked the deans to give me progress reports quarterly on those instructional reviews that are complete and the goals that were set. Likewise, the new teams that are addressing the new rollout. And we're also getting better about looking at data and asking ourselves questions about what that data is telling us and what are we going to do. One of the things that Myrna has told me, and it resonates and remains in my mind, that the activities that we do, whether required or best practices, the most important thing is what do we do with what results? Whether it's teaching in the classroom, whether it's reviewing a program, how do we act upon what we learn from the data, from the activities, the things that we do? And we continue to mature in that process with lots yet to learn. Strategic planning, instruction will submit their final strategic plan early in February. We did go through that process. And again, I remind all of us in instruction and across the system, wishing and dreaming and requesting doesn't always mean granted. But what it does do is it gives us an opportunity to think and dream. It gives us an opportunity to chase grants. It gives us an opportunity to develop partnerships. It gives us an opportunity to be considered for college dollars. I will tell you, instruction has done fine work. There are a lot of dreams and wishes and requests in those documents that will be put forward. And we will see what happens through partnerships, through grants, through college to move those wishes forward. We are working on a new project, an instructional technology fair that Claudia is leading with a work group of faculty and others. We are hopeful to release that for the first time this fall. The purpose on the front end is to make sure that the tools that we already have to aid instruction are known and utilized. Future goals is, what else is out there? You know, one of the takeaways from the webinar yesterday that we sat with through Dr. Kotis and I on, from HLC, was the importance in online student retention is the importance of ensuring our faculty have access to tools to support online instruction and that we provide the professional development and the awareness for them to use them. So I felt really good for a moment that we're jumping on this instructional fair because it aligned very well with the comments that were presented. For the Great Bend campus folks that are listening, 21-22 is around, just around the bend. That is our new academic calendar where we move our periods from 50 to 55, 75 to 80, and we have a later start than we've been accustomed to. So if you're on the Great Bend campus, be mindful of that. Academic Integrity, Lee Miller and the Committee of Council of Academic Integrity are leading a campaign. This is something for everyone. I want to ensure you that it doesn't matter if you don't teach. The academic integrity values of this institution are for everyone, and for you to be aware of them and to practice them and to mentor them and to help us with students, to help us guide them and mentor them to know what that means and what a decision now could do to their current educational experience as well as life. So I will tell you, we seem to be getting less reported offenses. I encourage faculty to not let up. If you've got something going on, we have a system and you need to report it, but we are seeing a slight downtick, which I will celebrate with you. Open educational resources, we have a three-year plan. We're in year two. We are serving that well. We have a work group led by Lee as well as Dean's Council that's looking at the next three-year plan. One of the large elements of that potential new plan is how do we get to a point where we have at least one degree, if not more, that offers students the opportunity to take all of their coursework absent of a textbook, but utilizing OER. It is an initiative, it is a goal, and we're putting together a plan to see if we might be able to achieve that. Also this year, we're gonna be taking a much harder look at our statewide articulations with various universities, both in-state and out-of-state, and getting past paper. Getting into action, getting into good, improved relationships with those universities, getting into a more reportable information to our advisors, our students, so that they're not signed papers that are rarely used. And so we're gonna put a lot of focus on that in this new year. Of course, we're looking at fall 21, and the golden question is, how do we offer instruction this fall? Is it like fall 19? Will it be like spring 20? Fall 20, we're having lots of conversations about that. We want to provide as much in-person instruction safely as possible this fall, but I will tell you in my remarks that will be forthcoming to instruction, we also always want to have a backup plan. If spring 20 taught us anything, folks, is we always got to be prepared. But we are hopeful and looking forward to a lot of in-person instruction, but also recognizing that we do have some students that like Zoom. Not all of them, but some of them do. And so we want to be able to market and serve as many students and their interests as possible. So we'll continue to dialogue about that. There will always be more emails from me on updates to instruction, but with that, I would open the door again. What do you want to talk about? What do you want to ask?
With a comment.
Oh, good.
and I am proud to be at Barton. Our leadership in the last year has been excellent, and communication to staff and students has been so clear that we all know that you have our best interests in mind. Thank you.
And thank you to the author, and thank you to all of you, because yes, there's a COVID team. Yes, there's a group of administrators, but folks, we're not getting through this with just those small groups. As the president wrote this morning, it takes every single one of us to get through something as startling as a pandemic, and then to take the time to learn from that and to move forward to greater innovations and greater opportunities. So, but thank you to that author. Very kind. Anything else? What do you do, Bus, when they don't say anything? You say it's a wrap?
It's a wrap.
I guess it's a wrap, but thank you for joining us, and thank you for all that you do to make a difference.